In 1973, Michael Ryan was chosen by the poet Stanley Kunitz to receive the Yale Series of Younger Poets Award. Kunitz has said Ryan writes intense, desperate poems. Ryan's new book of poems, his third, is called God Hunger. He's won the Texas Institute of Letters Prize, a Whiting Writers Award, and was nominated for a National Book Award in 1974. Ryan's poems and essays have been published in the American Poetry Review, The Atlantic, The Nation, and The New Yorker. I asked Ryan to read the poem Milk the Mouse from his new collection. The title comes from a child's game.
The game is taking the child's pinky, little finger on his hand, and squeezing it between the father's thumb and finger, and the game is how long can he stand it before he kneels down and screams for him to stop.
This is a game your father played with you?
Yeah,
alone?
It is.
And you hated it?
Oh, of course. This is called Milk the Mouse. It's a villanelle. He'll pinch my pinky until the mouse starts squeaking. The floor lamp casts a halo around his big stuffed chair. Be strong, be tough. It is my father speaking. I'm 4 or 5. Was he already drinking? With its tip and knuckle between his thumb and finger, he'll pinch my pinky until the mouse starts squeaking. Stop, Daddy, stop. It was more like screeching. And kneels down before him on the hardwood floor. Be strong. Be tough. It is my father speaking. What happened to him that he'd do such a thing? It's only a game. He's doing me a favor to pinch my pinky until the mouse starts squeaking, because the world will run over a weakling and we must crush the mouse or be crushed later. Be strong. Be tough. It was my father speaking to himself, of course, to the child inside him aching, not to me. But how can I not go when he calls me over to pinch my pinky until the mouse starts squeaking? Be strong, be tough. It is my father speaking.
Did you ever feel getting that kind of strong, tough surface that you were letting your father down?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the power of it, because love is always fused with hate, you know, or hate with love. I mean, it's especially in a parental, I think, situation. And the power of anything like this sort of way of treating a child is because the child loves the parent, loves him. And so it has great force. And rejecting that means, in a sense, to reject him, or he certainly would have made me feel that way.
Did you write poems about your father when he was still alive? And
no,
capable of reading them?
No, he wasn't. I didn't start writing poems until the year after he died. He died when I was 18.
Oh, so you didn't write any poems at all?
No,
until after he died?
Not a one.
Is that related?
Maybe. I think probably it is. But I also went away to college. I grew up in Allentown, PA, and was a jock and no boy in my high school who wanted to maintain his masculinity, quote-unquote, would have dared to write poems.
You've written several essays about the social role of poetry now and how poetry seems to have really lost its audience, in part because it's become difficult and inaccessible. You say some poets write as if they want to be interpreted, not read.
Yeah, exactly.
So how would you like to see your poems function?
I'd like to have them be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that the poem is an aural, A-U-R-A-L, experience, as well as an oral experience, O-R-A-L. I don't think it exists even on the page, even being read. I think it has to be said out loud and felt out loud, much less be a text, quote unquote, to be interpreted. To me, the vitality of poetry is in the physicality of saying it and hearing it.
Well, one of the subjects that you write about again and again is death, suicide, fear of death, being left by someone who is dead.
Yeah.
There's a poem that's related to that I want you to read, and it's called First Exercise.
Okay. First Exercise. I was swimming because I wanted to get skinny, having passed the age of 30 when the body begins its gradual revenge for all those days of inattention it secretly begrudged all along. So I was finally paying it my full attention, pulling it as I could back and forth across the pool's width at the baby end, standing after each lap to wait for breath and study the excellent rhythms of the swimmers in the roped lanes of the Olympic pool adjoining, as the light through high leaded windows broke into diamonds off their wakes. Nodding in turn to my companions at this end, two impossibly vigorous, white-capped old men and a dark woman in a black spandex suit that fit her like skin. I've always hated swimming for impeccable reasons, especially since I'm nearly blind without my contact lenses, and I didn't understand the new goggles I bought for my new regimen did not mean I could keep my lenses in and see new things. So from one of my fancy underwater racing turns, I came up without them and touched my eyes and looked and felt a rush of panic into my chest. The shock when someone says there's been a terrible accident and you don't know who or what. Of course, after a second, I thought, it's only your contact lenses. But I dived for them anyway, again and again, trying to hold myself under to pet the tile with my palms. And later, as I walked home, the world a blur of dull color run together, I thought of my friend diving at dusk in that mountain lake for his daughter, and what came to him when his hands sank into the cold mud at the bottom.
Are you ever afraid of giving yourself over to certain feelings that you're expressing in a poem because they're dangerous feelings?
I don't know what you mean by giving yourself over.
To too much loneliness or too much thought about death or those who have died.
That the poem itself would be a threat to that? It's actually the opposite. Yeats has a wonderful line in a wonderful poem called Lapis Lazuli. He says, gaiety transfiguring all that dread. And what he means by that is the gaiety of making. So that, in fact, the poem, I hope it's more than this, but poems are for me ways of making, I hope, something beautiful out of something difficult. And not always things difficult. Maybe we're, or I am, overemphasizing too much that poems can come out of other emotions besides desperate ones. But there is something inherent. Philip Larkin, a poem, a poet I love, says, happiness writes white. There is a way in which the urgency of personal emotion maybe has to, that the inherent tension in a poem needs to be between that joy of making and the contrary emotion which causes it, which makes it necessary.
There's a poem in which you describe how a bird flies into your cold wood-burning stove and gets terribly injured, and you go back realizing that there's not much you can do, you go back to your work and you say, I tried to clear it from my mind and return to the work I had waiting. That is most of what I can do, even if it changes nothing.
Yeah.
Is that basically the way you feel about writing? Like, you're not going to change the world by doing it, but it's what you can do, so you might as well just accept it and do what you do and not try to do what it is that you don't do or can't do.
Right. That's absolutely the way I feel about it. And in addition to that, I feel that poetry is one of the few things in our culture that can tell the truth, because it's not, because it's economically worthless or almost worthless, and it doesn't need corporate sponsorship and to please corporate ideology in order to exist the way in which movies and television and even radio needs to, so that it's just one person saying what it is for him or her to be alive.
Michael Ryan, thank you very much for talking
with us. You're welcome. It was my pleasure.